Hey everybody, it's the Shay Anything Podcast, another edition. Doug Williams here alongside Andy Martino. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Doug. Can you please tell the people what a soft close toilet is?
Well, yeah, we were just admiring Jerry Blevins' tweet. It reads, "Our apartment has these amazing soft close toilets, but now I slam every hotel toilet I come across like I'm Gronkowski after a touchdown." Andy, I don't think, had ever come across a soft close toilet.
My toilets are all hard close.
Yeah, soft close toilets are interesting. You know, you go to the bathroom, you put the toilet seat down, and it just kind of slowly goes down. There's no slam effect.
I'll tell you what.
I understand, though, that once you're used to that, and Jerry Blevins is at a hotel, and he just drops the seat, and it just slammed. So that's the point.
Well, first of all, I'm a Marriott guy, so clearly not in the class of society that gets the soft close toilet hotels. Second of all, on the subject of toilets, I had one put into my house recently. Well, it was replacing one that didn't work. All I want to say about this before we move on to baseball is that it was the least fun way to spend a significant amount of money in the history of my life, because I had a toilet. Then the guy came and did some stuff. I wrote a big check, and then I had a toilet. It was such an uninspiring way to spend some dough.
I'm just picturing our guy Glenn at Animating Sports. Use that.
Glenn, don't do it.
Quick toilet anecdote, and I promise we'll get to sports. When I was in college one time, I went home for a weekend, and I got a text from a roommate at the time that said, like, we had an issue with the toilet. We're going to replace it. And it turned out that they threw a firecracker into it to see what would happen. And it exploded like they do. And a hole was made in the toilet and the water went flying up to the ceiling.
Oh, man, I have another story.
No.
It's a baseball story. I'm not going to tell it. They're going to get mad at me. Okay. Gentlemen.
I can hear Jason producing this about to get in our ears and just say, all right, move on.
I have a really good baseball hotel toilet story, but you're just going to have to
see
me at a bar sometime and I'll tell it to you.
Don't forget, the show's available as part of SNY.TV's Mets podcast feed. Just search for SNY Mets in the iPhone podcast app to find us. Give us a rate and review if you like us. Andy, the last we heard of the Mets, again, we were talking before the show, it feels like
speaking
forever.
Speaking of toilets.
last we heard of the Mets was in Cincinnati. They lost 2 of 3. That is not good. But what was worse about the finale of the series was that they batted out of order. And
they
there
did.
Were a lot of people, probably Mets fans at work, who look at Twitter and see the Mets have batted out of order. Jay Bruce is angry, and they're just like, oh, LOL Mets. This is just what seems to happen. Your read on Mickey Callaway thus far as a manager, including him taking the blame for this, and where have you seen him go so far?
Well, it's gotten obviously harder for him to maintain that cool, calm demeanor as the team has entered into some really troubling times. He went from, when they first started losing, he went from like very confident, we're a real good team, is what he would say, and he's right. Now, there are some things that are really actually spiraling. And I thought he seemed, yeah, he did the right thing by not throwing his coaches under the bus on the lineup card thing. But I thought he looked pretty tight at that post-game news conference. I wasn't
there.
We were here. So I can't give you a read on the room. But Jay Bruce, obviously not happy, justifiably so. Look, you expect as a player competence out of those who are above you in the organization. They're expecting you to produce. You're expecting them to know what the heck they're doing. That broke apart for a second. I don't think the lineup thing was Callaway's fault, other than in a buck stops at the manager sort of way,
right,
which is not nothing. But still, that would be like if I told an inappropriate toilet story, it's not Kurt Gowdy's fault. You know, it's just like you have to trust your people at a certain point.
I guess I just you really want to trust those above you to make the right decisions, right? If you've ever been in a position where your superiors, and it doesn't happen here, thankfully, but your superiors are just not trustworthy, or
if it happen here, it's not something you broadcast.
That's true, but it's not something that happens here. But it's not a good feeling, I'm guessing, to be one of those players just knowing that someone, whether it's Mickey Callaway that deserves the blame or not, someone screwed this up. And it ended up affecting, you know, Jay Bruce's batting average. And it ended up affecting the Mets' ability to win a game in Cincinnati. And I guess, Andy, we talked about this because, as you said, we were in studio after this happened. But, I mean, does a manager have to say, guys, look, I messed that up.
Yeah.
It won't happen again. And gather the team together. Because as a fan, I'm guessing, too, you want to think that your manager has this all under control.
Right.
That they know a little bit more about the game and how it works than you do.
Yeah.
And this is not what it feels like right now.
Yeah, no, he does have to address that because players, we talked about this on BNNY right after it happened. Todd Zeal was here, and he agreed. Players don't need that much, generally, of an excuse to start hating on the manager. The manager is the guy that calls you into the office and gives you bad news. The manager is the guy who is in charge of you. No, let me even zoom that out a little bit. Nobody in America who has a job needs that much of an excuse to blame their person they report to. It's like a natural human thing.
Yeah.
So a clubhouse, especially when a team is losing, as the Mets have been doing more of lately than winning, clubhouses can come apart fast. Guys can grumble. A lot of it might not be fair, but that's just what happens. So I'm not saying the Mets are there yet. In fact, I'm saying I have no indication at all that the Mets are there yet. But to the larger point, yes, everyone's expecting competence from everybody up the ladder, and something like this definitely goes in the resentment file to be a card to be played later if something else were to go wrong.
Well, what's interesting, the timing of this, Andy, wasn't Mickey Callaway's decision-making just about to be a topic of discussion on our show? Because he's had a few of these issues with the National League and Nimmo facing a left-hander in a position that he hasn't been successful. He's made a few questionable decisions, and I'm just wondering if, from your read on the situation, mm-hmm. I know you're saying that we're not there and that, you know, Mickey Callaway, obviously his job is safe, but do you think anyone in the Mets organization is thinking maybe this isn't the guy we thought he was, whether that's a very bad feeling or just a slightly disappointed
feeling? I haven't gotten that impression. No one who was on the Mickey Callaway bandwagon would jump off anything approaching this quickly. I mean, it would have to go so far south for that even to be a conversation this year. He's a guy who's managing a team in its first slump under his stewardship, which was something that everybody knew was going to happen. And I can guarantee you that the in-game decisions he makes that we may not understand are coming from the analytics department and, you know, his gut feeling in a sense, too. But really, it's a collaborative effort in that and many organizations right now. So, you know, it's a difficult thing even to start to pick apart. It can be frustrating, actually, as someone who's supposed to analyze these things professionally, to try to pick apart a move, like playing Nimmo against the lefty, anything, to say, like, well, they may actually have something that says that this pitcher's spin rate against Nimmo's career exit velo.
We want to see right or wrong decisions.
Yeah, so lefty-lefty becomes like, what is this, 1960?
It's complicated.
To them. Now, look, to be clear, I think that organizations could do a much better job at explaining a modicum of this to the reporters who ask the questions in the public. Callaway hasn't shown a propensity for giving a lot of detail yet in terms of why you made a particular decision. I'm sure that's an organizational directive. One complaint that they had about Terry Collins, which certainly was a complaint of mine, was that he said a lot. So it would not surprise me if Mickey's being told to err on the side of saying...
You said certainly wasn't a complaint of yours, right?
It was not a complaint of mine as a member of the media. Yeah. Terry would explain something to you. Yeah. It was great. You walk into his office and you go, Terry, look, I'm not trying to question you, but last night, explain to me why you you made a defensive replacement at first base in the seventh inning. Oh, well, because da-da-da-da-da, and so-and-so was up third, and we knew they had a lefty. You go, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Even what ends up being a wrong decision, if you give a genuine explanation.
The rationale.
Yeah.
Which, like... Well, the whole other thing, on the Yankees side of the field, there was a slight controversy in the Yankees-Red Sox series about whether Aaron Boone should have brought Dylan Betances out for a second inning. And it becomes like, I thought it through and reported it out a little bit, and it becomes like, yeah, it didn't work, but there's a non-crazy rationale there. So that, and with Callaway, I think he does have to make sure that he provides some measure of that generally with his move. So, yeah, that's fair.
Elsewhere, Andy, Matt Harvey was traded to the Reds. He will have his first start with the Reds in Los Angeles, of all places, on Friday night.
Does that mean he's down in San Diego? Is he just go to the other one where the team is supposed to be? Whichever
he
one?
Just, for some reason, drives 2.5 hours to the other city.
The hang.
Well, it's going to be an interesting change for him, considering Cincinnati is not New York, but I guess that waits now because he's in Los Angeles. But let's look back at kind of, Andy, this trade. Devin Mesoraco was brought in. Very interesting moment on the air was you being on Baseball Night New York.
I did. I broke the story.
He broke the story on the air on Baseball Night New York and had the crew turn his microphone off because he thought that he was going to have to hop on the phone.
Yeah.
It turned out he did not have to hop on the phone, but he did have the news.
So the information was given to me via text.
Yes.
Yes.
And he came back to the couch with his microphone off, and for some reason our producers freaked out, but we didn't think it was that big of a deal. It was fine. Everyone understands. It was riveting television.
They actually took away my ID badge, and I wasn't able to access Four World Trade Center for a day because of that. No, that didn't really happen.
But
we
anyway.
Broke a story on the air. I don't know. Do you think our BNNY producers listen to this podcast? If they do...
Yeah, I'm pretty positive that Michael Flynn is sitting at his desk right now watching this.
If that's so, Michael Flynn, send me a text. I'll leave my mic on. I want to know if you're listening.
Okay.
You think he's listening?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, yeah, they were a little mad at me for not turning my mic back on, but I think I was audible.
No one cared. It was good television.
Thanks,
so
Doug.
This is just, yep.
There he is.
Text from Michael Flynn.
Flynn was very supportive.
Devin Mesoraco is brought in.
Yes.
Do you think that this comes closer to solving the catching position than the Mets were before they acquired him?
Well, yes. I mean, they had a couple of minor leaguers.
Well, what happens when Kevin Pilecki comes back? Is Mesoraco just a backup? Or do they want to see what he's got before Kevin Pilecki comes back?
Devin Mesoraco has to be a backup because he's demonstrated, not only has he demonstrated that he can't stay on the field, literally. I have to do this off the top of my head, but I looked it up a couple days ago. I believe he has not played more than 56 games in a season since 2014. Maybe it's 54, in that range. He can't stay on the field. That book is closed.
Right.
And if he were able to stay on the field, he would still be damaged by all those injuries and surgeries. Checking in with people that I know in the Reds organization, they said, great guy, calls a good game, works with pitchers well. The injuries have... forever limited his range, mobility, throwing, blocking, receiving. So that's the reality.
Hasn't played more than 56 games since that 2014 All-Star season.
Right, there you go. So that's been a long time.
Yes.
Now, I'm not criticizing the trade. It was a creative trade.
Yeah.
You could have traded Matt Harvey for a bag of Skittles, and I would have been like, Skittles are good. All right. Way to go, Mets. So at this point, the fact that you got a usable player to some extent back is terrific. And Mesoraco already had some value in the way that he helped Zach Wheeler kind of man up and pitch a decent game.
It was a great sequence in that last inning for Wheeler.
And through the whole game, he was like just pumping his glove and pushing his arms up to tell him when to put a pitch up in the zone. I don't know why I couldn't get that easy phrase out of my mouth just now. He was guiding Zach Wheeler in a way that we haven't seen from the more passive approach, certainly of a Travis d'Arnaud. Pilecki's somewhere in the middle on that scale, I think. So that's value. They will deploy him to do that, but they know that they can't overuse him or he'll get hurt again. I'd like to see a lot of Pilecki, maybe like 75-25 Pilecki-Mesoraco and pick your spots, which is obviously better than Lobaton and Nito.
Yeah, and for the catching situation moving forward, I think Pilecki, when he comes back, will probably get the majority of the reps, but I do think, despite Mesoraco's inconsistency, and despite the fact that he can't seem to stay on the field, if he hits 300 and stays on the field before Kevin Pilecki returns, then you could see closer to 50-50 or even something in Mesoraco's direction.
Yeah,
just
but
because
man.
Just like Harvey, I made this point when the news broke, just like Harvey, there's a little bit of that bright side effect because Mesoraco had that all-star season, just like Harvey did.
Yeah.
You look back in his past and you say, okay, Mesoraco has done this, so maybe he can do that again. It's a flaw. It's an issue that baseball fans have, like we do, but maybe...
Speak for yourself. I'm being very rational.
I'm not saying you're not, but I'm just saying with Harvey and players like him, like Mesoraco, we look at the back of the baseball card and we say, this guy was this, maybe he can be that again.
I don't.
Okay. Genius.
Mm-hmm.
With Harvey, we got an interesting question from Sean Campbell, who's a big fan of the show on Twitter.
Hi, Sean.
How does a manager as a former much-touted pitching coach not find a way to get more out of a former All-Star pitcher? This has been one of the big...
Question mark, exclamation point.
Question mark, exclamation point. This has been a big conversation on Twitter has been, do Mets fans want Harvey to succeed? Are they thankful for what he did, which was really put them on the map in 2013, get them very far in 2015? Like they wouldn't have been a story in 2013 if it weren't for Matt Harvey starting the All-Star game and being the pitcher he was. So are they thankful? Do they want him now to succeed, or do they want him to fail in Cincinnati? And I think part of that discussion is why didn't he have success here? Why is he now a project with the Reds but wasn't a project here with Mickey Callaway and Dave Island? Do you agree with that line of questioning?
Yeah,
or do you
there's
think
a lot
that's
there.
Unfair?
Let's see. Pick that apart. I think that do Mets fans want Harvey to succeed in Cincinnati? That is an interesting question, and I don't want to generalize because I'm sure there are plenty of human beings out there that are able to say, yes, of course, I want the best for him. I do think that there's a dark side of sports fandom where you dehumanize, where one dehumanizes and says, well, if he's not helping us, I hope he's no good, or then I'll wish he's on my team, or something along those lines. So I bet there's people out there that are kind about it, and I bet there are people out there that are kind of unkind about it, blinded by fandom. The piece about Callaway and Island, they moved into the bullpen really quickly. Jason Vargas has been no better. Wheeler, Matz, it's not like there were five solid guys and Harvey had no place in the rotation. It was that they made a decision to make Matt Harvey the first guy to go.
I was clamoring for that decision. Be fair, in my opinion, I thought he is losing them games. Mm-hmm. Take him out of the rotation.
Yeah, others were too. So I'm not going to – I thought at the time – I think it's an extraordinarily complex situation, interpersonal thing, where there's a lot of baggage between player and team. We've talked about this ad nauseum, obviously. So it's more than just performance why Harvey had to go. I think it'll be good for him to get out of town. I think it'll be good for the Mets to move on. But in retrospect, it might end up looking bad for those of us, not just on Sandy Alderson and Mickey Callaway and Dave Island, but for someone like me who said it was a great move. If he ends up pitching well and the Mets have a hole or two at the back end of the rotation, well, that's the risk they took.
Yeah, there's something that fans, and I've been guilty of this obviously too in the past, I don't think they think enough about surgery and and rehab and what that requires. Like, this is going to sound silly maybe to some people out there, but even going under anesthesia or going through surgery or going to physical therapy, if you've ever done it, doing what Matt Harvey did is so exhausting and tedious. Like, just from the standpoint of the injuries that he tried to come back from, Tommy John and thoracic outlet surgery, I was going through his Twitter after he officially got traded, just reminiscing on some of the things that he had sent out. And you know, he showed his personality at times on Twitter. Other times he's been very tight-lipped. And I just am fascinated by Matt Harvey in general. And there's that photo of him saying, you know, I have one less rib, and he's in a surgery bed. And I'm thinking to myself, just because this guy goes out to clubs, I feel like we've been saying, well, he's his own worst enemy. But, you know, he elected for this really difficult surgery that not many people know much about in thoracic outlet syndrome. And it's not, I know people are saying, well, what'd you think? He was going to just quit. Obviously, he was going to get the surgery. I just think in general, we have to be human beings about these people and say, they do a lot just to be on the field.
Yeah,
and
totally.
It's not something we considered enough when it comes
to
that.
There's so many ways to look at this. It's funny that we're still having an interesting conversation about Harvey. That is how fascinating the guy is. So many contradictions in there. I agree with what you just said. Some people said I was defending Harvey through the last couple of weeks. I wouldn't call it that. I've just been, we don't need to return to, but the whole idea of calling for empathy on him. And then, like, John Harper wrote a good column that was very much in opposition to what I wrote about Harvey, which was about, remember the time that Noah Syndergaard had to do his interviews as a rookie in the hallway because Harvey was putting so much peer pressure on him to be a jerk to the media and all those things. He was never nice or welcoming to Zach Wheeler when Wheeler came up and Harvey was already established. So there's so many things in there that you can defend him on, or you can say that he shot himself in the foot for. The clubbing thing that you bring up, Doug, I agree with you. That gets overstated. This is stupid. First of all, these guys get off of work at midnight or 11 or whatever, you know? So let's say you out there, sir, listening to this podcast, get off at 7, hit a happy hour for a couple of hours, go home, and get to bed at 11. Well, for a ball player, then that's the same equivalent as going to get to bed at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. So what's the big deal? But being a baseball player, being a professional athlete is so unbelievably stressful. The pressure that you're under, can you imagine if we were sitting here going, Unless you are one of the few guys with a huge multi-year contract, someone could come and take your job tomorrow or the next day or the next day. Or you could step off this chair and twist your ankle and you'd be done and no one would care about you. And if you tried to perform, but you performed poorly, the fans would boo and all of a sudden you're a bad person or all that stuff. So my point, my long-winded point, is that it's okay to blow off steam, and that doesn't make Harvey a bad guy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, the stories that you were talking about in Harp's column,
Those
are bad.
Yeah, like, it's complicated.
And I don't want necessarily, because I don't think I have a foot in either camp. I'm not entrenched in either camp.
It's complicated. Good for you.
Yeah, and I don't want people to think, oh, you're such a softie. You're so on Matt Harvey's side. What he has done in a lot of instances, especially the media stuff and with his teammates, is not good. I'm just saying generally, same issue with Masahiro Tanaka when people were saying, get the surgery. This guy should have just gotten the surgery.
Yeah.
Do you realize what you're asking him to do?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're asking him to go under the knife. Like, you're asking him to put the rest of his career in jeopardy. It's not just that easy. So I agree, and I think the Harvey stuff is interesting. I just, moving forward, I'm going to use my experience of just covering him in the brief mm-hmm. time that I did as a way to understand these guys. And one of your points was interesting about just the timing of being a professional athlete. I used to say when I did the 10:30 Geico Sports Night mm-hmm. every night, or the midnight, I did that every night too for a portion of my time here. I would get home at 12:30 or 1 or whatever, and I always used to say, everyone who has a 9-to-5 gets home at 5, relaxes for a couple hours, has dinner, relaxes for a couple more hours, and goes to bed. If I were to do that working late, I'd go to bed at like 5 in the morning.
Exactly.
So you kind of expedite what normal people do,
right.
And it makes perfect sense why an athlete would do that. So anyway, we'll pay attention to what Matt Harvey does in Cincinnati. I don't think he'll be a huge topic on the conversation on the podcast moving forward.
I didn't think that today,
right.
But here we are. He's a fascinating guy.
Or
maybe we're just doing a Reds podcast. Up next, Joey Votto. How many years does he have left on that contract, and what will the value be?
Adam Duvall, underrated. Mm. Andy, Dom Smith got called up, and this is one of my favorite little factoids that we were talking about right before the show. I'm going to find...
Can we get Mike Francesa or Boomer Esiason to weigh in on the
Hansel,
Bruce paternity leave?
Yeah, the paternity leave. Let's just leave that alone. Hansel Robles got placed on the disabled list, and Buddy Bauman came up with Dom Smith.
I want to make a point I made off air. Buddy Bauman might be a nice man. When I think of the word Bud, the name Buddy, I think of a golden retriever. You're a grown man, Buddy Bauman.
I don't necessarily think it's up to Buddy Bauman.
Can it be Bud?
I don't think you need to lecture him. Maybe lecture his parents. But anyway,
he's making the decision.
Buddy Bauman has a one-game suspension because the Mets claimed him, and he was in the Nolan Arenado fight. So the Mets probably need an arm. They're coming off an off day, but he can't pitch on Friday night. Anyway, interesting. So Dom Smith gets called up,
which may be before you listen to this.
Yeah,
to be clear,
true. I always think when prospects get called up, and I know this is wrong, but I always feel like, oh, they're here to stay. This is their time. And a lot of times they get sent down 5 days later. Is that one of these situations?
Probably, yeah. Yes. And Dom Smith has not done anything. He's been okay in Vegas. He is not in great standing with the organization in general.
Why?
You may remember that he was reported.
Yeah.
Well, you know the history with Dom Smith. He reported to his first big league call-up out of shape.
Yep.
He didn't show up for a meeting in spring training. He was injured, so I'm not going to say he couldn't get himself on the field, but that was bad timing in spring training. So it's not like we're talking about some heralded arrival here. We're talking about a guy who's already seen his stock fall and has to rebuild it slightly.
So does he have a chance to stay, or is this purely Jay Bruce going on paternity leave?
Most likely. We'll see what happens. You know, you could see how the weekend plays out. You could see how other injuries play out. But that's what he's doing here. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't play much. It's not that you need to start him. You have Flores, you have Adrian Gonzalez, you have Nimmo. He could be there to just sit on the bench. Maybe they'll give him a start. We'll see. Mickey Callaway, again, will probably have addressed this by the time you may have listened to this podcast. We have to remember.
Okay, so let's give an opinion on him, Andy, because first of all, just an anecdote. He came here for, I think it was Mets Hot Stove this offseason.
Yeah, he was in studio. I wasn't here, but yeah.
He blew away I didn't talk to him that day. I wasn't doing the show, but everyone he spoke to, he was blown away, not only by his physical shape. He mm-hmm. came in great shape, and Sandy Alderson mentioned that when he first arrived at spring training. And Sandy talked about this offseason. He was like, I hope he arrives in good shape. Let's see what kind of shape he's in. He showed up in good shape, and he was also such a nice guy. So is there a difference between, in the case of Dom Smith and young players in general, being that like nice guy and also having that attitude about baseball where you need to be a gamer or your organization can sour on you quickly?
Yeah, being friendly and being competitive. I'm not, okay, not taking a shot at Dom Smith. I don't want to take this too far.
Yeah, this is more of a...
As a general thing, being a friendly person and being the kind of competitor that you need to be on the field, like a good guy versus like a good guy for what they're looking for, it can be two different things, for sure. Just like you could be a jerk and be a great teammate. Like Roger Clemens has been demonstrated to be one of the biggest jerks in the world, like the best teammate anyone's ever had if you talk to someone who played with him. So it doesn't equate always.
So, but with Dom Smith, it's not just being friendly. It's about what you just mentioned in terms of his standing in the organization would lead someone to believe that he doesn't care about being great. Or it would give you an idea of Dom Smith that probably isn't a correct evaluation of him. So how can you explain with a young player not seeming to have that drive to get to the big leagues or to be your best big league self?
You know, there's so many things. I don't know that Smith has or does not have that drive. That's a tough thing to speak to unless you really know somebody well. But ultimately his drive won't matter. His results will matter. So however he gets to those results, the drive certainly helps. There's guys that, you know, we were just talking about the humanity of ball players. I remember people always used to wonder about Ruben Tejada in this way. It's like they're finally handing you you're the starting shortstop for the Mets after Jose Reyes leaves. You have a fair amount of talent. He seemed to show no desire. And a lot of people thought that he was homesick for Panama the whole time. He's just like, I'm here because I'm here, you know, and I can...
Because I can do this.
But, like, I'm homesick. And so maybe it's, you know, sometimes... You never know.
Yeah.
You really, really, really never know. Smith might be burning with the fire of a true Hall of Famer. We'll see. We haven't seen it yet.
I think the number one, and if you're a Met fan and you're listening, tweet at me whether you agree or disagree with this, but I think the number one source of frustration with Mets fans right now, their team can be 500 for the next couple months, and I think this will stay the same, is Smith and Rosario. They're watching the Yankees continuously bring these guys up that work. And the Yankees are a rarity right now. I'm not saying that that's normal. But Smith and Rosario, just like we've been hearing about them forever, and they haven't amounted to any wins at the big league level.
I'll tell you what. If you look at Rosario, I know Andujar's had a great stretch, but if you look at Andujar and Rosario's on-base percentage, they're equally problematic.
Yeah.
So there is one thing there. But
one's
I take your
one's
point.
Been much more productive.
Of course. But that one might end up not being as much of a blowout as it looked for a while. It's like, why can't... I'm sure the emotion is, why can't our guy be the Correa or the Lindor or the Gleyber Torres? Yeah. Or it's because he's not. I don't know.
Well, I know your first reaction to that point is always, well, prospects, this thing is such a crapshoot. 100% correct.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just more, maybe it's more about Mets fans in general. You can give, like, you talk about Brian McCann all the time. You tweeted about him a couple weeks ago. Like,
boring man.
No Yankee fan is clamoring for is reminiscing about the Brian McCann years. And there's a reason for that. It's because he didn't grow up in the organization, and the Yankees spent some money, and he was a good signing. The Yankees needed a catcher. They brought in Brian McCann. For Mets fans, like, Todd Frazier's great. He's from Tom's River. He's a good personality. He hits home runs.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing drawing Mets fans to Todd Frazier. He's just a guy that your general manager wanted to spend some money on. It's like the Jerry Seinfeld thing. You're rooting for laundry. It's Mets fans want to root for guys who came up as Mets and are a product of the organization you root for. That's why I think they care much more about how Med Rosario and Dom Smith and Kevin Plawecki do than they do Jay Bruce.
I mean, yeah, I agree. Like, fans want to win, and then they even more want to win with homegrown players. But
you get more credit.
But, like, did that make them like Cespedes less in 2015?
No.
Did that make Yankees fans like Paul O'Neill less?
It's sweeter. It is a sweeter feeling when a guy from your organization, because it's bragging rights. It's saying, yeah, this is our guy.
Yeah.
We cultivated him.
Yeah.
That's why he's great.
That's fair. I look at prospects differently. They're assets. And it's just as good to get a proven big leaguer. He can either play for you or you can, like Michael Fulmer. Michael Fulmer has been an extremely productive player for the New York Mets. You know why? Because they use that asset to get Yoenis Cespedes and go to the World Series. That's a great draft pick by the Mets and a great use of a prospect. So to me, winning. But I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Going ahead to this series this weekend in Philadelphia, Andy.
Yes.
How much better of
the one that may or may not have happened?
How scale of 1 to 10, 1 being pretty great, 10 being just the best ever. How great is Gabe Kapler as a manager?
0.0.
Still kind of on the great scale, though, because this is only a great scale. You can't say anything worse than that.
So on the great scale.
As of right now, your prediction doesn't look great because the Phillies are playing good
baseball.
It doesn't
matter. The Phillies could win the World Series. The guy's a dumpster fire. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I see this going one of two ways. He ends up being a very good...
I won't be wrong about this.
Well, that's so frustrating because you made a prediction that he'd be a bad manager. What if he's a good manager?
If they win, I'm telling you in all seriousness, if that team is successful, it will be in spite of him. John Heyman had a good anonymous quote from a Philly in a story recently that said, a Philly player said, we'll be fine as long as our manager gets out of our way. That's what, if they win, that will be how it happens.
So you made a prediction that even if on the surface you're wrong, you won't admit to being wrong.
Well, because I happen to know what I'm talking about in this instance. It doesn't always happen, but in this instance I do. They will be good in spite of him if they're good.
Mets are an interesting division right now because the Braves and Phillies. Which team of those two? We got to get to my Saturday night.
Braves. Yeah, they're better than the Phillies.
Okay.
I think they're not quite there yet, but that's your surprise team in baseball this year potentially. We've gone over that for sure. They need a pitcher. You know what would be a really interesting thing? I can't take credit for this. I was listening to Brad Lidge and Casey Stern on MLB Radio, and they brought up the Braves should trade for Michael Fulmer this year.
Yeah.
Like, that's a guy everyone talks about the Yankees. So that if they decided to go all in, and by the way, their GM, Alex Anthopoulos, is an all-in kind of guy.
Loves going all in.
So keep an eye on all. I'm not saying keep an eye on that, sources say. I'm just saying, like, keep an eye on the Braves.
One more starting pitcher and one more reliever. They are fun to watch. If it didn't affect the Mets, I bet, like, Mets fans have watched a lot of the Braves. I bet Mets fans even enjoy watching them play if it didn't affect their team.
I was a Braves fan for 20 years, Doug.
Yeah.
Now I'm just a cold, cold-hearted man.
On Saturday night, Andy, I'll start because I don't have much. I was in Jersey with my parents. It was my dad's birthday, so we hung out, went out to dinner. That was that. Point Pleasant, New Jersey.
That's not enough detail.
A little night out. What else do you need?
Like, what is your dad doing at birthday?
We did next to nothing.
Were you at TGI Fridays and did the waiters sing?
We didn't go to TGI Fridays. The name of the restaurant escapes me, but it's great. I wish I could give it credit. But Point Pleasant, New Jersey, which, by the way, a lot of up-and-coming restaurants in that town. If you are a shore-goer.
Yeah. I had fun. I went to a Kentucky Derby party. I watched the Derby on a big screen. My family and I dressed up real nice.
Shocking to me that you're a Kentucky Derby.
Oh, I love horse racing. The most fun I've ever had as a sports writer was the 2 weeks that I covered the Belmont Stakes in 2008 when there was a horse called Big Brown that was going for the Triple Crown. Horse racing is beautiful. If anybody cared about it anymore, I would want to be on the horse racing beat. It's a beautiful sport. And Mark Malusis, who's a big horse racing expert, helped me get educated. Oh, this is actually cool. He helped me get educated on all the horses. We spend a lot of time in the newsroom when we do the late shows. We're taught you give me all the information on all the horses, who's a mutter, because it was a rainy track. And I brought this to this party that I was at, and people were, like, amazed that someone in 2018 knew this much about the field of horses. I'm like, I got the chart up, and I'm, like, describing them.
But you're not a gambler. Most people...
I bet on horses sometimes if I'm at the track.
Oh, okay.
Like, as a fun thing. Not large amounts. But that's the... Horse racing is the only sport I've ever placed a bet on in my life. Oh, my gosh. I almost just cursed. I love horse racing.
You really did almost
just curse. You heard what almost happened there?
It wasn't one of those situations where you even got to it and didn't?
I did, but...
What is the name of this restaurant? Oh, I think this might be it.
It's good radio here, folks.
River Market in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Great restaurant. Get the Caesar salad. I know that sounds boring. Best Caesar salad I've ever had.
Not cool.
And by the
nice,
way,
but not cool.
Yeah, nice, but not cool. That's me. I was at the River Market. I had dinner. We sat around all day. I watched some baseball. It was kind of a nasty day outside.
Was it?
Yeah.
I was outdoors at my party with a mint julep and a suit on, and my wife looked lovely. And
is there any story that you could give animating sports that, did you make your own mint juleps? Because
there was a punch bowl.
We've had success in the past with.
There was a punch bowl. I sound like an alcoholic on this show. These are just Saturday nights,
you
people.
You drink like Don Draper. You have the most interesting cocktails.
So what happened
I had a beer at the restaurant.
I got to the Kentucky Derby party. It was Kentucky themed. The women were wearing hats and The men, I wore like bright pastels to the extent that I own them. Like I wore a pastel tie. And there was a bowl of mint juleps, but the host of the party had made them too strong, and it was a crazy first 45 minutes of the party as a result, and then everyone went to wine and beer.
Can you, what was crazy about it?
Just everyone was like, oh my God, these mint juleps are strong. And I was like standing watching the children play on a trampoline.
And you don't even know which one your kid
is. And I just leaned up against this garage door wall, and I was like, I'm leaning against the wall. It's 5 o'clock. Okay, time to get off the mint juleps.
We'll talk about
that is your, a gift to Glenn of Animating Sports.
Wow. You consume just a touch too many mint juleps.
Not that many is too many.
Don't forget, this show is available as part of the SNY.TV Mets podcast feed. Search for SNY Mets in the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. Definitely subscribe to it, rate it, review it.
And I'm told we have a special guest on Tuesday. Can I say who it is? Because
maybe.
No. We have a special guest on Tuesday.
We may have a special guest next week.
He might be a special guest, or we might say that we never said this. But tune in on Tuesday.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.